previously on The Scope.
Go ahead, Adam.
So along with the funk, Maroon 5 also packs in a number of homages to...
Homages.
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 I got a hunch that is going to make it into the previously on The Scope.
You think so?
Maybe we should just play it over and over again.
Why do you use words like that? No one uses words like...
Actually, nobody uses the word homage?
Actually, I think they use it too much.
Please, keep reading there, Brainiac.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scope. It's the only show where snarkiness is next to godliness. I'm your announcer, Tony Partington. Coming up on this edition of The Scope...
We take a look back at 1992, we find out if On the Lot should be on TV, and Adam performs his homage to French words that are now part of the English language.
And now, here are your hosts, Jared, Adam, and Shane.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 31 of The Scope. I was going to introduce it as the Eclectic Acoustic Afternoon with Jared, Adam, and Shane, but we got a little bit of electric into that song. Sounds good. Good pick, Jared. As Tony Partington announced earlier, the show is hosted by three people. One of them is myself, Shane. Another one is Adam. Hello, Adam.
Hey, Shane.
And finally, but certainly not least, Jared.
I don't believe you when you say that. I think I am least.
You say it so much. Why would he believe it anymore?
Well, it's a hot one out there, gentlemen, so we are kind of hunkered down here in Jared's subterranean studio to stay cool.
Hunkered down.
Hunkered down. And, you know, initially it was going to be a real short intro block, but on the way over, or actually right before on the way over, a mailman stopped by, gave me the new Entertainment Weekly, so this is hot off the press. Not too many people in the country have it right now.
Did he actually get down on bended knee and present it to you like a medal?
He said, "Sir... Your Entertainment Weekly is here." And there's a couple different things there I want to talk about. Number one, 25 greatest action movies. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I will go through the top five. I want your opinion, Jared and Adam.
Let's go.
Okay.
Bring it.
We'll start number five. This is the first time I've looked at this. Very exciting. The Matrix, number five. Adam,
sure.
Worthy of being in the top.
Top five, mm-hmm. Yes. The first one, yes.
1999 movie, so maybe
disqualified from the 92 review then.
Number four.
That's foreshadowing.
Number four goes to the 1982 George Miller classic, The Road Warrior. One of the greatest action movies of all time. Top five?
Honestly, I'm way over that movie.
Top five, no. Yeah, 25, sure.
Yeah.
I don't think so. As a matter of fact, it didn't have Tina Turner, so I would be...
Okay, I don't think any of them would be top five, but...
Master Blaster runs out of town. Number three goes to a movie that we're going to be seeing a sequel to in just a year or so, The Raiders of the Lost Ark, 1981.
Top five, yes.
Top five?
I guess. I don't know. It's like it's hard for me to say that's more action-y. I guess it depends on like how you're reviewing it, but like than The Matrix? It's not more action-y than The Matrix.
I think it is.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a different kind of action.
There's trucks blowing up. There's Nazis getting punched about. There's a couple of Wilhelm screams. It's a good time.
Okay. Giant rock boulder.
Yeah, there's a giant rock boulder, and there's the as they chase him and
throw me the whip.
Snakes? Why did it have to be snakes?
Idol. Number two,
melting.
I completely agree with this. By the way, number two would be the 1986 movie Aliens.
Yep.
James Cameron.
The number two, though. Wow.
Second biggest ego in Hollywood. Who knows?
I don't know about number two, but first, I'd say top five.
Who's the first?
Michael Bay, of course.
Oh, well, I thought it was Jeremy Piven. Pretty sure it's Jeremy Piven.
And the number one movie, which is not at all unpredictable, but I agree with it 100%, would be Die Hard.
I agree. I was thinking it before you opened it.
John
Tiernan. And then you flipped through it, and I saw you hit the number one before we did the first, and I was like,
is there a better action movie than this, Jared? Than Die Hard?
Boy,
if there's, what would you pick? Because I would pick this as number one.
Put on the spot.
No question.
I'll go along with that. Number one, sure.
Like, if you watch it again, it's like, I mean... Well, is RoboCop in there? Because
let's take a look. Okay. You guys keep you tell, oh, tell me RoboCop. tell me about how great Die Hard is while I'm looking for RoboCop.
RoboCop's not a good movie by any means, but like I saw it when I was 7.
Gory as hell.
Which apparently, yeah, I didn't remember it being that gory. And like, you know,
well, the uncut Criterion version is much gorier.
Oh, is it?
RoboCop yeah. does make the list at number 14. Jared, do you have any movies that maybe you could play a bell as we try to guess if they're in it or not?
Boy, just straight up action movies.
Straight
huh?
up action. Movies.
Terminator 2 is that in
Terminator
there?
2 number 10. Adam, another pick.
Load Runner.
Load Runner.
Load Runner. That would be a video game.
Is that on the list?
I'm not seeing Load Runner.
That's close.
Some others in here include The Incredibles at 25. Lethal Weapon pops in there.
I don't. Incredibles? No. Come on. You can't put animated on there. It doesn't count. Unless there's real stuff blowing up, then it doesn't count.
Spider-Man 2.
Now, if they crash some servers during the course of it, then, yeah, definitely action-packed.
Here's a controversial pick.
Thanks for choosing to ignore me as I comment.
Let's talk about this. Well, actually, there's two controversial picks.
Controversial
I see.
To you.
Number 18, The Adventures of Robin Hood, 1938.
Which one? Oh, 38. Not the Kevin Costner.
That would be Errol Flynn.
Not the one featuring Bryan Adams
you
music.
You can't include that. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, does it hold up to the modern standards of action?
Never seen it.
Say the last 25 years.
And this one could be...
Is there fire in it? Does anything explode? Right. I mean, that's a barometer of action.
No, is there actual... Like, had fire been invented back then?
Yeah, no fire in 38. The number 8 movie on this would be Saving Private Ryan.
That's really action.
But an action film? Boy. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to deny that it doesn't have action,
I mean,
but...
The first 20 minutes alone, I think, probably sets it in there. It's incredible. Might be high, though, because I guess it's... Other than that, and then the last 20 minutes, it's...
No. Yeah, there's a lot of little
you know, action usually spikes. Involves the deaths that are meaningless, you know, hundreds of people
I'm thinking
killed.
More of a mindless popcorn movie,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you got to say that, like Adam said, that first 20 minutes and then the last scenes, you know, where they're kind of holding up, waiting for reinforcements to come.
That sticky bomb?
Sticky bomb.
Did any Bond films make the list?
Good question, Jared. And the answer is yes. Number 19, Goldfinger, 1964.
Okay.
The Bond Adventure would be higher on the list if parts of it hadn't aged as badly as they have, i.e. the whole giant mirror, Aston Martin crash, which is kind of laughable.
What about like The Bourne Supremacy?
Look at here. Right next to it at number 17. Yeah.
That's a great movie.
See, I was thinking that actually the most recent Bond movie would be the best choice to be on there because that one, as far as Bond movies go, seemed pretty violent to me.
Any superhero films on there?
Yes, there are a couple. Spider-Man 2 at number 21. And beyond that, I don't think so.
What about, I was going to say Leon or...
Nope.
What's the name of the normal one? The non...
The professional. Professional? Nope, no professional.
Because the last 20 minutes of that is really, really violent.
What about Ghost Dog featuring Forrest Whitaker?
No Ghost Dog, but in a movie that would enrage our good friend Earl, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon pops in at number 16. And
it's too pretty to be action-y.
There's so many things that it's based on, though, that were... Yeah. Definitely great action movies.
So wait, Kill Bill. I saw Kill Bill.
Is it U.S.?
But
pardon me?
Is that only U.S. films? Or
No, there's actually a number of foreign films in here.
Really?
So. Kill Bill Volume 1 pops in at number 20.
Well, I was going to say, are there any other Tarantino movies? Because I doubt it.
No.
If that one's in there. But because I think Reservoir Dogs, well, that's not really an action movie. It's more violent. I guess I'm thinking more just violent now.
In terms of foreign movies, Jared, you asked and you shall receive. Number 23, Drunken Master 2.
Oh, Jackie Chan action. Yes, that is fantastic.
I don't really know if this is considered completely foreign. But Enter the Dragon pops in at number 15.
That's definitely foreign.
And then also number 6, Seven Samurai.
One
Star Wars.
Kurosawa action?
Yep. One Star Wars movie makes the list at 12. That would be Empire Strikes Back.
Really? That has the most action?
I guess. Maybe. And I don't know.
I guess there's a big scene at the beginning. But
Clone Wars is probably the most action-y.
Of the bunch.
Of the six. But it's not a good movie.
Attack of the Clones?
So you can't. Or yeah. Attack of the Clones.
Yeah. And the movie that I absolutely hated, and I don't know why everybody liked it, came in at number 11. That would be Speed.
Mr. Ripley? Yeah.
Speed. I never liked Speed.
Liked the first one?
No, I didn't.
Wow.
I didn't really like
first
it.
First one was good. Second one, oof. That's bad.
That was pretty much the perfect 90s action movie.
It was.
I'm surprised you didn't
like
it.
I just didn't like it. And
True Lies, is that on the list?
No, but...
any other Schwarzenegger films?
Yes, one other Schwarzenegger
Commando?
Film. Nope.
Batman.
Predator,
number 22. There we go. See,
Carl Weathers movie.
Jesse Ventura. It's got everything, folks.
I think we can wrap up the show at this point.
Yeah, we're done, everybody.
This is great content.
Okay, final. Thank you, Entertainment Weekly. And I want to follow up.
Thank you for telling us what to like.
I want to follow up on something we did last week, or last show, where we talked about some of our favorites of the past television season. Entertainment Weekly goes through and does their picks for best.
Can we just read the letters to Entertainment Weekly?
Entertainment Weekly. Dear EW.
We're just doing the Entertainment Weekly
podcast. Can we see what subscription offers are slipped inside there?
Never.
The blow-ins, as they call them?
By the way, Time Warner, the show is still accepting sponsors.
Yeah, so just bring it on. We've never done this before. But I did want to point this out. Entertainment Weekly has their picks for Emmy, who they think should win the Emmy. Best Actress in a Drama, Friday Night Lights, Connie Britton.
There you go.
They say, hands down, primetime wife and mother of the TV season, Connie Britton is a no-nonsense, playful, sensitive, and sexy, sometimes all in the same hour.
Proves that Shane and I and our symbiotic brain actually know something.
So I watched...
What did you say would be the best actor, actress?
I don't know.
Adam and your bunch?
It was some guy, I assume, because I don't like chicks. They don't think they can act. I think only men should play women roles.
I hear that, you woman-hating bastard.
Wow.
They did pick...
We need to add women bashing to the description now, so Carrie will be happy. At least she'll know what she's getting.
That's right. Best comedy, they picked The Office. No surprise there. And best drama, let's just see. They pick HBO's The Wire, which I've never seen, but probably one of the most critically acclaimed shows in television.
I keep watching the first disc. That's as far as I've ever gotten, and then I just stop watching it.
Yeah. They say in a close second place, Friday Night Lights. So
I watched one episode of Friday Night Lights.
Yes.
What night is it on?
It's on Friday. It's on Sundays now.
Is it?
What, so Friday? What?
No, the reruns are on Sunday nights,
okay,
aren't they?
Friday Night Lights is?
Yeah, but they're going to be. It's going to be moved to Friday night next season.
I think makes sense. I mean,
it still will doom it.
It's kind of considered death television, but there is a relationship between the name and when you would expect to see it.
And maybe they will expect lower ratings because a lot of people don't watch television.
I watched one, I guess probably right after the last podcast we did. And
Did we do a podcast?
2 weeks ago, you know?
Oh.
That one?
Right.
And I was instantly hooked.
You were instantly hooked on Friday Night Lights, huh?
Yes, random episode right in the middle of the season, I assume.
So we weren't talking out of our asses?
Much like Patton Oswalt, you're hooked.
Yes, much like Patton Oswalt. I was reading his blog, actually, and that's like all
simultaneously
he was
watching
about.
Friday Night Lights.
Right.
If Patton Oswalt wouldn't have given a thumbs up, you would have said, forget it. I don't want any.
No, he said that like back in May or something. I just remember reading it.
It's that good, isn't it, Adam? It's a flawless show.
I wouldn't say it's flawless. I watched 20 minutes of one random episode, but I liked it.
Would you say that we could get more entertainment tips from Patton Oswalt?
Mm-hmm. I would say Patton Oswalt would be the go-to source for all entertainment tips.
I wish we could get him on the show.
Will he have a magazine called Entertainment Pot Patton?
I wish we could get him to come to Minnesota to see him.
Ooh, crickets and stereo.
He never comes here. He came here last year for the what's his name? That stand-up comedian that was from here that died?
Mitch Hedberg.
Mitch Hedberg tribute, and he was really good, but he never tours here otherwise.
I saw Mitch Hedberg live, by the way. He opened for Dennis Miller years ago when I saw Dennis Miller at the State Theater.
Did I see that with you?
Did you? You may have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course you did. I mean, we share a brain, so it's kind of hard to go to different places.
People don't understand that we're actually connected, and we just Photoshop it out in any picture that we're together.
I'm actually like a ventriloquist puppet, and I sit on Shane's lap, and he puts his hand in my nether regions and controls me.
It's hot.
It's very hot. Well, the show wouldn't be complete without a mention of the Transformers movie.
Yeah?
What are we going to do come August?
We're going to cry. So, Jared, play some sound effects, and then let's get into it.
Everyone loves the Transformers, and he won't stand for anyone messing with those iconic characters. Let's find out how Michael Bay and Steven Spielberg's cinematic adaptation of those lovable robots are angering
anyone but Earl
in the Scope's More Than Meets the Eye Movie Madness Moment.
So we're listening to the new Transformers theme from Mute Math.
Yeah, not a fan. Not a fan of that entire album from what I saw of it.
Yeah, we'll be talking about... Whoa! Track listing from the Transformers soundtrack includes music from Linkin Park, Smashing Pumpkins, Disturbed, The Goo Goo Dolls, and more. Mute Math is kind of an up-and-coming hot band right now, so...
Really? They've been around for a while, haven't they?
I don't know if they have.
How do you up and come when you've been here a while?
Well, I mean,
I was going to say, I think they've been an up and coming band for the last 6 years.
Let's say New York is an up and coming city.
A little bit more on the radar of people. How about that? So here we go. Updated song. Jared, your opinion.
You know, I don't hate it. I don't outright have like venom towards it like some people do. But it's almost exactly what I thought a synth rock driven Transformers theme would sound like. And it's just kind of boring.
Yeah,
and they just make up their own words.
I find it amazing that people are surprised that this is what they did.
It is exactly what it would be.
Also,
right?
It's not as bad as the Weird Al song from the animated movie. So,
ooh, Dare to Be Stupid, but that wasn't from the movie necessarily. It was out before. I mean, that was the album
it was
Dare to
used
Be Stupid
in the movie, though.
Don't most of on Jared's Weird Al. I mean,
most of the music from that film is terrible now, if you listen back to it.
Yeah.
And the whole film is a series of like little music vignettes.
Yes.
That's another French word, Adam.
Vignettes. Pronounce that.
Vignettes?
No, it's not vignettes.
All right, there's a G, isn't there?
Yes.
So what else we got going on? You know, we've talked a lot about our good friend Earl, who is not a huge fan of the Transformers, although he said he can go into the movie open-minded when it opens July 4th.
Will he be having surgery beforehand? Is that the deal?
We'll be lobotomizing him live on the scope.
Literally open-minded.
Yep.
Literally.
But in response to the workings of Steven Spielberg and Michael Bay, Earl and another somewhat frequent guest of the show, John, they produced a YouTube video entitled Spiel Bay, which is sort of a parody of the directors, I guess. And Jared was great enough to cut up the clip and let us listen to it. So play
the best part is the homoerotic tension that you can hear between the two of them.
Let's see, it's in the pauses between the words.
Let's play it.
Hello, I'm Steven Spielberg, director of Raiders of the Lost Ark and Jaws.
And I'm Michael Bay, director of The Rock and Armageddon.
That's killer room
tone. With only 1 month to go until Transformers the movie comes out on July 4th, Michael Bay and myself have teamed up with YouTube to bring these exclusive video diaries to you to show you a behind-the-scenes look at the movie-making process and answer any questions or concerns you may have about our upcoming summer event.
When Steven first asked me to direct, I thought, why would I do that? I don't like Transformers, I don't like cartoons, I don't like toys, I don't let my kids play with toys, I don't let the neighbors' kids play with toys. If I see a child on the street playing with a toy, I will walk over there and remove his toy. Forever.
I knew Michael Bay was the perfect director for this job.
And Steven assuring me that I didn't need a plot or story, I gladly accepted. But he still insisted that I put in those stupid robots.
Oh, you. Kiki Kanachua.
Now, that was cut down from a two-minute-plus version.
I think that's better that you cut it down.
If you want to go check out the whole thing, just go to YouTube and search for Spiel Bay. If it's like a Brangelina or
I'm sure we'll be linking it because drive more traffic.
You know what pisses me off about that is that Earl and John got sponsorship with YouTube with one video.
I know.
And we can't get any sort of sponsorship.
We've got to create our own company to sponsor ourselves.
So
called Scope Tube or something.
Believe it or not, Michael Bay didn't take that sitting down. He actually recorded a rebuttal to that almost immediately. Jared, if you would you play that for us?
Certainly.
In Hollywood, it's what we call a groaner, which means they are laughing at you instead of with you. You know, the dialogue just made me very uncomfortable. It wasn't very funny to me, and you were hurt by your acting as well. So it's just. Didn't really work for me.
Boy, he's kind of a a bitter guy, isn't he? Holy cow!
I couldn't tell who was Michael Bay. Was that him? Was that John doing Michael Bay right there, or was that actually Michael Bay?
Wow, I'm gonna let that one alone and let you feel all the heat for it.
Sorry, guys.
It's a comedy show, right?
It is. We bring the funny
show. Here. Well, we'll signify it with this. There we go. Now you know it's comedy.
Hopefully, both of those gentlemen will be on our next show, but we won't get into that too much.
Michael Bay and Steven Spielberg?
We're going to be going big.
Well, we had to fly them out, but
the child molesting Steven Spielberg, according to the Spiel Bay video. But hopefully we can get into that, and we'll talk a little bit about the creative process that goes into making a video such as Spiel Bay.
Sounds fantastic.
If you watch the video, you'll really want to know exactly how they made that.
How did you get that lockdown, steady shot? Did you use like some sort of support mechanism? I mean, how does one do that?
I think you're going to take more heat than me, my friend.
I was being a mocking fan who didn't understand what a tripod is.
Okay.
Apparently, I have high concept comedy.
You really do.
Wait. Now you know it's funny.
There we go. So we got one more order of business, and that would be the scope poll.
I would
get ready to vote for your favorite.
You gotta keep
it's
rolling.
It's time for the scope poll.
I just wanted to point out that I'm annoyed that I can't find movie Transformer toys at Target.
Get ready to vote for your
or
favorite
source.
It's time for the scope poll.
I can't find them anywhere.
I saw some today at Shakopee Target.
Do they transform?
Uh-oh, yeah, that's a whole issue. We'll get to that next time. But yeah. They are out there. Maybe they're that popular, Adam.
No, there's no space for them at Target. I mean, there's no, like, empty area.
The symbiotic brain at work.
They do have the Mr. Potato Head Optimus Prime, though.
Very nice.
Should we actually talk about the poll? Okay, let's go back to episode 30 and remember that our poll was... This isn't even the right question, but I remember the question. My notes are off. The question was, should we continue to do the scope poll? And the answers were yes or no. And with a resounding 100% of the vote from all three of you who voted, 100% of you said yes, continue the poll. So the poll continues.
I think the deafening silence from our fans means that they're really behind it.
Maybe we'll look
indifferently behind it.
I think what it's saying to me is that, yeah, either they don't care or they're looking for some sort of easier, more apathetic way in which to vote. So I'm going to start looking at ways to maybe enable web voting, you know, doing it online. But I want to be able to hide the answers because there's got to be some mystery for the show.
I agree with you completely.
And clearly my ploy to get people to email and voicemail in is not working. Mm-hmm. Everyone's just like sitting on their couch and watching reruns of Hogan Knows Best.
I think we need to piggyback like on the Hillary Clinton campaign and see if we can, you know, as her supporter.
By removing Rodham from our name?
Yeah. Maybe if we could, you know, get on her coattails and have her door-to-door people mention us as they're interviewing, try to get votes, you know, also listen to the scope and vote in our poll. I think
that maybe we could just really not hitting it today.
Maybe we could just trying to be funny. I'm just trying to think of ways to get people to listen to us.
We could just travel door to door like Jehovah's Witnesses and hand out little pamphlets.
I thought we already were. What have I been doing for the last month?
Apparently following our instructions without question. Mm-hmm. Boy, is he a fool.
And hitting your comedy is just as hard as I'm hitting mine.
Shane, here's the thing. People voted that the poll continues, so we're going to continue the poll.
Please.
So we have another question. And this is a question that's kind of an interactive question where you actually have to listen to the show and participate.
Uh-oh.
The question is, which of the new Transformers themes do you think is best? Your answers are the one we just played from Mute Math from the official Transformers soundtrack, another version of the theme from a band called Black Lab, which I will play later in the show, or a third option.
No, unprecedented, no,
there's
slow
a third
down.
Option. Both suck rocks.
It's too complicated.
I only like the original themes. Nothing that could be produced in the 21st century is any good at all. So there you go. You can always, email your votes into comments@thescopeshow.com or call your votes in with full venom and glory to 206-350-7056. Maybe we'll play them on the air if they're good enough. And only email and phone votes will be counted. And that is the poll that you voted to continue.
Do you hate Weird Al in general?
No.
Adam, or just that song?
That's a terrible... Especially watching it with the movie.
The Junkions?
It's really bad.
I will even agree as a fan of Weird Al that that song sucks in the movie. I liked it. I like it outside of the movie. Myself. I mean, okay. I was a big fan of that album.
But. I mean, I stopped liking Weird Al when I was 13. But.
Wow.
Tension in the room. Tension in the
room. Also, isn't Mute Math...
I'm going to see him in concert, so I guess I like him better.
Isn't Mute Math a... I'm just kidding. Isn't that a terrible name
wait.
For a band?
Oh, okay, everything's
funny.
Cleared
it's
up.
All cleared up.
I don't think it's a good name. I think band names are important. You know,
yes,
getting
they
a
are.
Good name. I think Math Lab.
As opposed to not having
would
a,
be
name?
A really good name for a band because it's like Math Lab and like Meth Lab.
It's right there.
Oh,
double
see, there
meaning.
You go.
Yeah,
you just change a vowel and it's different.
It's hip and trendy.
Like, and then
because kids love math.
Because kids love math too.
Mm-hmm. It's a kind of a combo,
especially meth kids. So
they stay up all night.
Right,
and if you change the A to an I, then it's Math Lib. Like Mad Lib.
Yeah.
See? There's so many possibilities.
It keeps going.
Wow. And you wonder why people don't do kind of call in or...
I think it's because of
respond
you.
Respond to the... I can't even say it. I, you know. Yeah. Coming up on the show, everybody. It's a new feature, the Random Year in Review. And the year we're looking at is 1992. It's also summer, and that means new reality television. And we will be reviewing On the Lot, the critically acclaimed Steven Spielberg-produced show. Also, the usual business of Under the Scope. So, everybody, thanks for tuning in. Don't go anywhere, because the Scope will be right back.
People are starting to talk about the Scope. Even the upper crust of Hollywood has taken notice. Here's what the stars and starlets of Tinseltown are saying about our modest little podcast. Will Ferrell.
I'm proud of you, fellas. You all kept your head on a swivel.
Tracy Morgan.
Man, I don't know what the f*** you just said, little kid. Special man.
Steve Carell.
You f***ing oh, I hate you. I hate you.
Thanks, famous people. Now, back to the Scope. Are you ready for the next generation of randomness? It could be more appalling. It could be more incredible. But it's definitely more unpredictable. The Random Year Review.
1992.
Yes, indeed, everybody. We're taking one of the most beloved Scope segments, the random review. Yes, Adam, stop chortling and blowing it up. The three of us will cast our critical gaze upon one single year, 1992. And
that's gaze like a view, not gaze like plural of gay.
Boy, well, that was really gay.
Okay. We're already destroying the intro text. I work so hard on this. Anyway, we'll be... I say the three of us will cast our critical gaze upon the year 1992 and pick out some of the most compelling films and CDs of that era. I have no doubt it will be an awesome and eye-opening adventure. So let's begin, Adam. The year was 1992. Mm-hmm. It brought us Jeffrey Dahmer, President Bush 1 vomiting into the lap of the Japanese Prime Minister, and Jay Leno taking over The Tonight Show. In this year, we got to know Ross Perot a little better. Bill Clinton won the election. And both Image Comics and the Mall of America opened for business.
Holy cow, you've got all kinds of history there.
Wikipedia 1992 is a really good source.
A lot of that stuff I got off the top of my head. Thank you very much. If I may be so bold, in the year 1992, it was a year of transition for popular culture. Grunge and college rock were about to explode, but the scene wasn't quite over the hair metal hangover of the 80s and early 90s. Not quite revolutionary in the world of films, Tarantino was lurking about, but not quite bold enough to do away with movies like Honey, I Blew Up the Kids, and The Mighty Ducks. And for the record, it was the year Adam turned...
12.
I had that written down. 12 years old. So let's kick off the first ever random year in review, 1992, with a look at music. And just to give a little perspective, gentlemen, here are just a smattering of popular songs released in that year. Color Me Bad, All for Love, All I Want by Toad the Wet Sprockets, Connected Stereo MCs. Even Better Than the Real Thing, U2, Free Your Mind, En Vogue, Jeremy, came from Pearl Jam that year. November Rain, probably the last big hit from Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, thank you.
Tears in Heaven, Eric Clapton's very sad song featured in the movie Rush. Why by Annie Lennox. Two Princes by the luckiest bar band ever, Spin Doctors. Under the Bridge by Red Hot Chili Peppers. And Jump by Criss Cross.
Wow, that's all over the place, isn't it?
So, yeah, it really was a year that featured a number of popular genres, but you can kind of see where music went from there. And now I'm
downhill
overall. But let's get on to our music selections. And looking at my notes, Jared has me number one. So the album that I picked,
you go whatever order you want.
I'll go number one.
All right.
The musical selection I picked for 1992 was REM's "Automatic for the People." Thank you very much. Give some background on it. The album's name refers to the motto of an Athens, Georgia eatery, Weaver D's Delicious Fine Foods. And this a little background about the album itself. It arrived directly on the heels of the band's previous breakthrough, Out of Time, which had Shiny Happy People and Losing My Religion. That hit in 1991. So they
also marked the point when I stopped listening to the band.
There you go. Automatic for the People entered the United States charts at number 2. It sold over 4 million copies and spent several weeks at number 1 in the UK. As a consequence, REM was marketed alongside new acts such as Nirvana and Pearl Jam as purveyors of alternative music, despite obvious sound differences. I mean, they certainly weren't grunge. Some would say they were sort of the kings and masters of college rock, and when grunge died, that was the type of style of music that remained in terms of alternative music. Let's see. They had 6 singles off of the album, including Drive, The Sidewinder Sleeps Tonight, Everybody Hurts, Night Swimming, Find the River, and the Andy Kaufman tribute, Man on the Moon. So let's listen to a little bit of the first single. That would be Drive.
Hey kid, rock and roll. Nobody tells you where to go, baby. What if I ride? What if you walk? What if you rock around the clock? Tut, 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 tut. What if you did? What if you walk? What if you tried to get off, baby?
can totally hear Eddie Vedder in there.
There he is. Automatic for the People is generally considered to be one of R.E.M.'s best albums and one of the finest releases of the 90s, being the 42nd greatest album of all time, according to the website, acclaimedmusic.net. So it must mean something, acclaimedmusic.
It's on a website. It's important.
And fourth best of the 90s.
I hate it when you create websites just to support your argument on the show.
ShanesAwesomeMusic.com says it's number two.
I can't believe it. It was nominated for Album of the Year at the Grammy Awards in 1993. And in 2003, the album was ranked 247 on Rolling Stone's list of 500 greatest albums of all time. Let's listen to another clip, the not as often heard, but terrific Night Swimming.
Night Swimming deserves a quiet night. Photograph on the dashboard, taken years ago. Turned around backwards so the windshield shows. Every street light reveals a picture in reverse. Still, it's so much clearer.
Jared, I gotta tell you that the sound coming through my headphones is just impeccable. It sounds great.
It's beautiful.
It's the music. The music is, it's very well recorded.
Thank you, Michael Stipe. So why did I pick R.E.M. Automatic for the People? I'm not a huge fan of R.E.M. I mean, I didn't really follow them in the early 90s too much, although I did see them in concert for their next album after this Monster.
You loved Andy Kaufman.
I'm a huge fan of Andy Kaufman. And, you know, Michael Stipe's voice is one of those voices where, boy, you either got to love it or you got to hate it. And there's real no in between, I don't think. I'm not a huge fan of that voice, but I do think that they have a huge important place in popular culture, and especially 91 to about 93, where they were dictating what alternative music was doing at the time, and they overcame their sort of indie alternative beginnings and stepped to the forefront along with bands like U2. I mean, they were right there in terms of popularity, and you know, over time their releases weren't great, especially as you started getting to the later 90s, and they lose the drummer, who was it, Bill Berry, who left, went off and did his own thing.
Did he open like a McDonald's franchise?
No, he actually went to do farming, of all things.
Wow.
And you know, and Michael Stipe started a little bit crazy.
Plants.
You know, I picture Bill Berry riding around like a John Deere tractor in the middle of a field, you know, like a little garden tractor, not doing anything, but I do think
that, I bet with all his R.E.M. money, he had a pretty kick-ass tractor.
He could do whatever he wanted to do. But no matter what, I mean, this album had three or four solid singles. You don't get that in too many albums nowadays, and I think you got to give R.E.M. props for what they did. Yeah. Any opinions, gentlemen, or should we move on to the next?
I wasn't a big fan of R.E.M. overall. I like their earlier stuff better, I think, and Shiny Happy People kind of did me in as far as it was just too whiny, and I never really listened to them post that. That said, I understand. I mean, you can't deny the hit quality of some of the songs on this album.
Mm-hmm.
It's immaculately recorded. I mean, it sounds wonderful, but if it's not your kind of music, it's not going to save it for you.
Yep. Adam?
This and Monster are still to this day two of my favorite albums. I think I have yet to meet many people that genuinely like, you know, a good number of R.E.M. songs.
Sure.
It's really like, I've never met a girl, first of all, other than my mom, that's liked R.E.M.
In general, you've never met a girl. But
that too. Yeah. So I always find that weird, and I don't really get it. I always appreciated the fact that Man on the Moon was so very obviously about Andy Kaufman. Mm-hmm. Like if you know anything about Andy Kaufman, you pick it up right away. That, and there's a Ben Folds song about who's the old ABC sports announcer?
Howard Cosell.
About Howard Cosell. Those are like my two favorite, like kind of like biographical.
Yeah, but 75% of Ben Folds songs are about people.
Okay, famous people.
Okay.
Famous people get biographies.
That's true. There's no biographies.
Those are my two favorite biographical songs of all time. So.
Well, R.E.M. in general, they are impeccable songwriters. I mean, it's interesting, and you can kind of take what you want out of there. One thing about R.E.M., and then we'll move on to the next album, is my best friend in high school, you know, so late 80s, he was a huge R.E.M. fan, and I kind of knew who they were and was in the mix with them, you know, pretty much, you know, right as they were, it was kind of the super indie gods. But, it really took this album along with, I just totally blanked out, the previous album and Monster to really get them on the radar of popular culture.
Yeah.
So let's move on to Jared with his selection for one of his most noteworthy albums of 1992.
My presentation is not as long on facts as Shane is, but it's a little more from the heart, maybe. Who knows? I chose the Beastie Boys and Check Your Head.
He gets a clap.
You got one too. Okay. I'm just being fair to everyone. Okay. This song, this song came off. This album came on the heels of the critically regarded but poor selling Paul's Boutique. And it pretty much saved their career, I would say. I mean, they may have gone on to continue to do some underground stuff, but this got them back into the public eye and back into the mainstream popular culture. And it really also signaled a big change in their musicianship, where the old school rap style that they had done in on License to Ill and Paul's Boutique kind of gave way to them picking up instruments again. Almost doing kind of more like a retro soul, alternative, punk rock. So many styles are fused together on this album. So it was really, really interesting. So when it came out, it debuted at number 10, which was a pretty big deal considering how badly that Paul's Boutique had sold. And like I said, rap wasn't one of the main features on the album, but it still was on there. And their real sample-heavy sound that they had started to use, courtesy of producers, the Dust Brothers, on Paul's Boutique, carries through on this. Although I think the samples are probably less well-known and definitely manipulated more often, because there was a big deal on Paul's Boutique with... this was before everyone had to clear all their samples, and there's some pretty, pretty obvious samples on there. And it post that album, the actual original creators of music started to go after people who were sampling. So
locked it down.
So let's listen to one of the rap songs here. This is a sampling from So What You Want. So there you go. You can definitely see, definitely sample based, but it's more gritty, a lot edgier, and then distorted vocals and everything like that. One of the other things, as I said, is they started going back to playing instruments. And one of those styles that all of them pretty much came from was hardcore punk rock back in the early 80s. So they got back to that. So the next song we're going to listen to a little bit of is a song called Time for Living, and it's definitely hardcore punk rock. So there you go.
Wowzers.
For me personally, this was fantastic album. It opened my eyes to the fact that you could still do rap, but you could do other things too, and you could bring instruments into rap music, and you could do all these cool stuff. They had all these instrumental tracks that were kind of these laid back grooves, and it was just, the whole thing was just like, I couldn't believe that somebody had put this album that was so eclectic and so different together into one piece. And it really kind of set the template for what they would do with their next album, Ill Communication,
which was pretty much a mega success.
That was a huge success. I had their, I guess you could say, maybe their biggest song ever, Sabotage, was on there. A whole bunch of really, really impressive instrumental music. Great album, but this started them in that direction.
Adam, Beastie Boys fan at the age of 12?
No, actually, because like I had liked, you know, some songs here and there, but for whatever reason, I wasn't a fan. I remember when I turned 14 is when I started listening to them a lot, though. This is actually my and now I have every album that they ever made, so I, you know, eventually picked it up. This is forever and ever been my second favorite after Paul's Boutique, my second favorite Beastie Boys album. My one issue with it is not of it at all, but that it's always felt to me to be like the precursor to late 90s, early 2000s new metal, rap rock.
There's actually, I think it's in the song Alive on the Sounds of Science. anthology where there's a line in one of the in the song that Ad Rock says something about, you know, this new rock rap thing has to go away or something. Basically, yeah. taking a shot at them and the genre that they kind of created a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah. I mean, and I mean, also, and to this day, there's never been, I've always considered them a rap band, even though, like, if you ever listen to Some Old Bullshit, which is their collection of, like, old B-sides, it's, like, mm-hmm. almost all punk.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still, like, a certain style to it that's, like, very different from normal punk bands.
Yeah.
So I just always, and, like, there's never been a rap group that's been able to kind of, I don't know, touch their style, especially on this album.
And the different styles they have work so well live, because they can do a whole big set of really, really block rock and rap songs, gets the crowd jumping, and they can go back into the laid back instrumental grooves. It's a fantastic time. If you ever get a chance to see them live, do it.
They're great. Jared, one quick question for you.
Yes.
Are you surprised after the Beastie Boys being in the public eye for about 20, 22 years or so, after, you know, having success with a song which is clearly a gimmick song, that a band like this would still have any resonance, you know, a quarter of a decade later, a quarter of a century later?
I don't think so, because they've never been a slave to trends. They've always done their own thing. So, I mean, they just continue to do their own thing. If they want to do something like To the Five Boroughs, which is definitely, you know, right back to old school rap style, right after they had done a whole bunch of stuff that was a little more instrumental based, they can do it and nobody cares. They just say, oh, it's Beastie Boys just having fun again.
I think that people will always buy their albums because they'll go to a party, you know, like an 18-year-old, 17-year-old, whatever, will go to a party, hear Brass Monkey, and they'll always like the Beastie Boys.
I want to go to a party like that.
And
they've never been invited.
By the way, I would disagree and say that Fight for Your Right to Party is probably their most well-known, biggest hit.
That's what I was saying. That's kind of, it was a gimmicky sort of song.
Oh, okay.
That's what I was
right.
saying.
Okay.
Definitely their biggest hit, but what was their follow-up song single to that, Jared?
To what?
To Fight for Your Right to Party. What did they release after that? Do you know?
Off of, I don't know if they really had a big hit single off of that album. I'm trying to think. I don't know.
Oh.
I mean, I have the videotape, and they had various videos for some songs, but...
Scope listeners...
Brass Monkey might have been it, actually.
Maybe it was Brass Monkey. Scope listeners, if you can verify that for us, please send it in. Comment to thescopeshow.com. Adam, you've got an album.
Yeah.
Let's listen to it.
All right.
Or what you have to say about it. The whole thing, yep. Screw copyright.
I picked It's a Shame About Ray by the Lemonheads, or we'll just say Evan Dando. This is back when people such as Tom Morgan, who's in a semi-famous Australian band called Smudge, and Juliana Hatfield were in the Lemonheads.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know she was in there.
Mm-hmm.
When did she leave them to go form the Three?
Yeah, right. After its initial release, I guess a lot of people remember this as the album that Mrs. Robinson is in.
Mm-hmm.
They did a cover of the old Simon and Garfunkel song.
Okay.
The album was actually released originally without Mrs. Robinson. Then the band, I think it was on some soundtrack, and then the studio re-released it with Mrs. Robinson as the 13th track. And it actually had to be re-recorded with a different bass player after Juliana Hatfield left for the album version. Other semi-controversies from the album include the record label pressuring them to change the song, which we all know as just Buddy. It's like the sixth track on the album. Originally, it was titled My Drug Buddy. And if you've ever listened to Evan Dando songs, either as just Evan Dando or with Lemonheads, almost every song has some drug reference. First clip is from the first track on the album called Rock and Stroll. It's a song that's sung from the perspective of a baby in a stroller.
Smile at me, looking upwards to the sky, moving forward all the time. Sidewalk lines, dunk, 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 die. It's warm in here.
A couple other highlights from the album. The one I mentioned earlier, Buddy, it's another really good song. There's also a cover of Frank Mills, which is from the musical Hair. Last clip is a song called Rudderless, in which Dando compares someone, probably himself, if you ever read the lyrics to the songs, they're almost always about him, compares himself to a ship floating through life. But like most Lemonhead songs, it's still kind of like positive and optimistic sounding somehow, or at least, you know, poppy and happy sounding, even though kind of melancholy and mean.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
feel like we were watching a clip from the movie Singles right there.
I don't know why. I remember listening to the album back when, you know, in 92.
Oh, really?
And so
pretty hip 12-year-old, I got to say.
Thanks. I watched MTV. They played videos of actual, you know.
Wait. Yeah. MTV played videos.
15 years ago, yeah.
Who would have thunk it?
I think it's interesting that none of us chose the obvious, like Pearl Jam's or Nevermind. I guess Nevermind
was 91.
That was when
I was tempted about to pick, just because that 92 was when it hit for me, really. Yeah. But I
kind of like that, you know, it's like, I'm sure everyone's heard of the three bands that we picked, but you know, they're not obscure, but like compared to like the giant music of that year.
Well, 92 really was a fascinating year doing research on this, figuring out what musical trends there were at the time. It really was a year all over the place. I mean, I graduated from high school in 92 and I have no recollection of Pearl Jam, Nirvana, any of these bands in high school. When I got into college later in that fall, it was like things blew up. And I guess I have to preface that by saying the alternative music scene in Minneapolis in terms of radio wasn't great. So there was a station, but I don't even know how much they were on that scene.
Did you not listen? Because one thing I was going to say when Jared was talking about what was the first clip that you played for the
So What You Want?
Yes, So What You Want. Like, that's a rap song, but they played it on 120 minutes on MTV.
Right.
And like that was like a really good source to find alternative music in 92, back when 120 minutes existed.
Well, for me, I was a little bit more...
Your parents didn't let you watch cable.
Yeah.
When did The Edge start?
Edge would be the main modern rock station here. I think it started in 93.
Okay.
Early 93.
And that's when we started hearing a lot of this stuff.
Then it was wide open.
93X was there, and I mean, that's where I heard like Nirvana and stuff, but they were still pretty much hair bands for the most part.
See, I remember Nirvana being big that year because the first half of 92, I was really into rap.
Yeah.
Warren G, and you know, Regulators, Snoop Dogg, NWA. I was really into them for the first half of the year. And then like over the summer that really faded. But I remember the first half of the year being like, I hate Nirvana, you know?
Yeah, like, you didn't like them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan.
So as a 12-year-old, I was
a huge fan. That song, when Smells Like Teen Spirit first came out, I was just blown away.
Changed your world. Well, let me ask one question about the music of 92, or at least the clips that we played, and then we'll move on to movies.
Okay.
Listening to what we heard, does that stuff sound dated to you guys, or does it sound like you could hear stuff like that on the radio now, or it could fit comfortably? At least some of it, to some degree.
Dated to what extent?
Well, like, that came from the early 90s, you know, versus, hey... You know, somebody could record that and put that on the radio, whether it be just alternative radio or...
I don't think you would hear the Beastie Boys stuff on current radio at all, just because of the way it's set up. That kind of stuff is...
Sure.
We have like one hip-hop station in this city and I don't listen to it, so I don't really know what kind of stuff they're playing.
Probably not a lot of Beastie Boys.
But Time for Living would never be on the radio, and...
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe the Lemonheads maybe sounds a little dated, but not that bad. I think the R.E.M. stuff... It's so polished and so clean and so studio sounding that kind of stuff still lives on. I mean, I don't think that sounds dated at all.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your response. Let's move on to the films of 1992. We've got three doozies picked out, but first of all, a little history. 92 was a year when safe films reigned supreme. While some seeds for some more interesting films may have been planted, nothing really stood out. Oh, Unforgiven and Clint Eastwood found success at the Oscars, and Sister Act and Batman Returns were big money makers, but the film revolution wouldn't come this year. Some big films of 92, Aladdin, The Bodyguard, Home Alone 2, Basic Instinct, and Sharon Stone's Bleep showed up. Lethal Weapon 3.
I don't think you need to bleep, because there's going to be plenty of free language later on in this segment.
Well, the word I wanted to use, you wouldn't want to hear that coming out of my mouth. A Few Good Men, Scent of a Woman, Alien 3.
You call it Vajayjay.
Vajayjay.
Yeah.
Cool World, Crying Game, Howard's End, Malcolm X, and White Man Can't Jump. And for the record...
I almost picked that one.
92 was the first year where I started to see pretty much everything in the theater. So I saw actually almost all of these. And I was one of the few people that saw Cool World in the theater for the 2 weeks that it was actually out.
I never got around to it.
I changed my pick, by the way, so hopefully...
Oh, this is exciting. Well, I hope we didn't overlap. And you know what?
I doubt we did.
No,
just for that, Jared, I want to start with you. What film did you pick for 1992?
I picked, and it's been, I don't know, maybe unintentionally teased throughout the first part of the program here, but I picked Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs.
There we go.
It was kind of a film that, I guess you could say, maybe jump-started the whole indie movement with films. Was it with Miramax, wasn't it?
Let's
it kind of helped put them on the map. The other film I was tempted to pick was his buddy Rodriguez's El Mariachi, but mm-hmm. I thought about it. I'm like, well, it didn't quite have as much impact on me, and it would be really hard to pull a clip in the original Spanish language that would make any sense to mm-hmm. most of our audience. So I went with Reservoir Dogs, and it kind of the whole style of it with the extended dialogue scenes and the moving forward and backwards in time and the really, really kind of rough edged characters and all the pop culture references. And it really, really, I mean, it obviously established a Tarantino style of filmmaking, but it also kind of, I guess, gave other directors permission to start doing this kind of stuff again and make interesting films. And I guess I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, it's a very violent film. It has a lot of popular music in it.
Did you see it in a theater, by the way?
I did not. I didn't see it until video. Okay. I don't know if it ever played locally around here.
The best thing, not the best, like one of the best ways to describe that movie, though, is that it was like fucking cool. Like,
it really was.
Like, there are so many scenes that, you know, especially like when you go back and you watch it like for the fifth time or something, it's like, that is fucking awesome. Typical guy.
Adam is clearly stuff. In the spirit of the film demonstrating the kind of language you're about to hear in the clip.
Play it.
I'm going to set it up a little bit first.
Okay, set it up.
This is an example of the typical kind of Tarantino film where you have a scene of a bunch of people talking that really has nothing to do with the film. It's just people talking and the kind of stuff that they get into and his real stylized dialogue. I had to cut it down from like 3 minutes down to like a minute and a half. I'm sorry it's so long, but I wanted to keep some of the essence of the scene intact. So, you know what, if you haven't seen it, then you can kind of understand where it's going. And this is the infamous "I don't tip" scene from the beginning mm-hmm. of the film.
All right, everybody cough up some green for the little lady. Come on, throw in a buck.
I don't tip.
You don't tip?
No, I don't believe in it.
You don't believe in tipping? Let me just get this straight. You don't ever tip, huh?
I don't tip because society says I have to. All right, I mean, I'll tip if somebody really deserves a tip. If they really put forth the effort, I'll give them something extra. But, I mean, it's tipping automatically. It's for the birds. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're just doing their job.
Hey, this girl was nice.
She was okay. I mean, she wasn't anything special. Hey, look, I ordered coffee, right? Now, we've been here a long fucking time. She's only filled my cup 3 times. I mean, when I order coffee, I want it filled 6 times.
6 times? Well, you know, what if she's too fucking busy?
Words "too fucking busy" shouldn't be in a waitress's vocabulary.
Salty language.
You don't care? They'd count on your tips to live.
You know what this is? It's the world's smallest violin playing just for the waitresses.
You don't have any idea what you're talking about. People bust their ass. This is a hard job.
So is working at McDonald's, but you don't feel the need to tip them, do you?
So is hosting a podcast.
Why not? They're serving you food. But no, society says, don't tip these guys over here, but tip these guys over here. That's bullshit.
Waitressing is the number one occupation for female non-college graduates in this country. It's the one job basically any woman can get and make a living on. The reason is because of their tips.
Fuck all that.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, I'm very sorry the government taxes their tips. That's fucked up. That ain't my fault. I mean, it would appear that waitresses are one of the many groups the government fucks in the ass on a regular basis. I mean, if you show me a piece of paper that says the government shouldn't do that, I'll sign it. Put it to a vote, I'll vote for it. But what I won't do is play ball. And this non-college bullshit you're giving me, I got 2 words for that. Learn to fucking type. Because if you're expecting me to help out with the rent, you're in for a big fucking surprise.
Just convince me. Give me my dollar back. Hey. Leave the dollars there.
All right, note to Adam, we might want to enact the explicit tag for this particular episode.
Yeah, put that up there.
I don't know. For me, this was just, as you said, Adam, it was just such a cool movie to see, and it introduced me to all these actors that I had been around, obviously, but I had never seen before. I mean, Harvey Keitel, Steve Buscemi was in it. Tim Roth, this is my first Tim Roth. I'm like, I'm just blown away by him.
You probably saw What's-His-Name in Footloose, though.
Who's that?
Chris Penn.
Chris Penn.
Maybe, but I didn't know him from there. Okay, but yeah. He's dead now, isn't he? Chris Penn? Didn't he pass on?
Yes, he passed away. You know, it's fascinating listening to that scene and then comparing it to Quentin's pretty much exactly the same scene in Death Proof.
The breakfast scene, yeah.
And, which I think fell completely flat and was uncomfortable, in my opinion. But
I agree.
You know, it's interesting you guys love this movie because I hated this movie and I'm still kind of on the fence about it. I saw it after... seeing Pulp Fiction, which I thought was one of the best movies I'd ever seen in my life. And then I went, I think probably over to Jared's house, and we all sat around and watched this movie on video, and I was just so disgusted by it, and the violence was, to me, was so much over the top and more realistic than Pulp Fiction that I couldn't get over that. But
it's a very tough film.
It was very tough. So maybe if I would give it a chance now, but at the time, 1992, 93, it was not one of my favorite films.
My opinion of Tarantino is that the Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction are the best films he's done. He's never been able to, I mean, he's had moments of greatness in his other films, but they've never approached those two films as far as being a complete entertainment package from beginning to end.
I kind of like Jackie Brown. Like, no one else seems to like it. And I think maybe I like it because it's not really his, it's Elmore Leonard book. You know, so it's like, it's so detached from him, but I really liked it. But yeah, I mean, the characters in this, like, no one's likable, but everyone you talk to that likes the movie, like, has a different character that they like for, like, always different reasons.
Right. Whether Mr. Blonde or Mr. Pink or Mr. Brown.
Mr. Purple. No. Adam.
Yes.
You've got a film.
I do.
I want to hear about it.
All right.
And you said you changed last second, right? So no one knows. This is maybe Jared.
Well, I could have gone, since you teased the Dahmer thing earlier, I could have gone with Body Parts. Terrible movie that was. No? You guys don't remember it?
I never saw it.
Okay.
Never saw it.
Earlier, I had told you over IM that I was going to go with My Cousin Vinny. Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's a fascinating pick, but...
But I got an Oscar for Marissa Tomei, sure, so it can't be that bad.
For no apparent reason. And so instead, I went with Shakes the Clown.
Shakes the Clown. Wow. Critically lambasted Shakes the Clown.
We'll get to that. So it's a 92 movie. It was directed and written and starred in by Bobcat Goldthwait. It's got a bunch of other people that you've heard of these days. Julie Brown, not downtown Julie Brown, by the way.
The redheaded Julie Brown.
Kathy Griffin, Florence Henderson, Adam Sandler, Robin Williams, who I'll give a little trivia thing about at the end. It's a dark comedy about clowns that perform, you know, at kids' parties, but they're all alcoholics and they're all depressed. And it's, they all hate each other.
Dirty, ugly clowns. Filthy.
Apparently, I like you say 92 was a year of flawed characters in movies.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, this was Goldthwait's bitter satire of the dysfunctional stand-up comedy circuit he knew as a performer. So I kind of like that, you know, inside knowledge of what he was doing there. Critical and audience reaction to the movie was decidedly mixed, to put it lightly. Leonard Maltin gave it his lowest rating possible. Boston Globe called it the Citizen Kane of alcoholic clown movies.
Wow.
While many performers adopted it as a cult classic. Because of its cult status, there has been much talk over the years of a sequel, but I don't think Goldthwait's really into doing that.
Shakes the Doorman? No?
In an interview with Conan O'Brien, Goldthwait revealed that no less than Martin Scorsese had defended the film from detractors. When a critic derided the movie in order to make a point about good movies versus bad movies, Scorsese revealed, quote, "I liked Shakes the Clown." It's always possible that he was talking about a different movie altogether and was just insane that day. Here we're going to listen to a clip where Binky, who is played by future Mr. Show star and the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, Tom Kenny, he becomes the movie's villain. We listen to him here lamenting about what the other clowns at the bar think of him.
Why? Because I'm an asshole! Asshole! You all hate me? You all loathe me? Make fun of my jokes? Think I'm not funny? Think my balloon animals suck? You know that. Binky the Doormat. Binky the Doormat. That should be my name. Not Binky the Clown. Binky the Doormat. Everybody walks all over. I don't stick up for myself. They say the squeaky wheel gets the grease. I'm the quietest fucking wheel you've ever seen because I don't bitch about anything. I'm a wimp. Fucking nuts. That's what I am. Insane. No, I'm not insane. I'm just different. Didn't wear my crystal today. That always makes me a little tense.
Shane, will your clip feature the F word?
It probably won't, but I'm picturing SpongeBob, you know, with that right on top of it. I think that'd be a funny bit.
That would be funny.
I'd mentioned Robin Williams in it before. He has a cameo in the movie as Jerry the Mime, but he's credited under Marty Fromage. And I don't know if
he could say fromage just fine.
Wow,
what's the deal?
No problem there.
I don't know if
it's a joke, folks. It's a joke.
If it has anything to do with the Spinal Tap appearance, but oh no, it's Billy Crystal. Yeah. Billy Crystal plays a mime in Spinal Tap.
Yes, he does. And so does Dana Carvey. Actually, they played two mimes.
Is it Dana Carvey?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
So there you go.
Before he learned how to chop broccoli.
Shakes the Clown.
Never seen it, so I can't comment on it. But
there was one that I know my friend Tom, who introduced me to Reservoir Dogs and worked at Video Update, he was a big fan of Shakes the Clown, but I never got around to seeing it.
I would recommend.
Okay,
I would
check it out. I'll put it on my Netflix queue.
Jess has it on DVD if you guys want to borrow it. But it's, I don't know. Like, I put it in the UHF region of comedies that people just hated the guts out of. And I don't really understand why, that I found, like, really funny.
Probably because
hates Weird Al, but likes UHF.
Bobcat was, you know, kind of out on the outs there, so.
What?
Bobcat Goldthwait, you know.
What do you mean on the outs?
Well, I mean, he wasn't really popular then, so it makes it.
Has he ever been really popular?
Well, yeah, think about Police Academy. I mean, he was hot right then.
Isn't that like the exact same time that Police Academy 3 or 4 came out?
I don't know.
I think they came out in the early 90s.
Check your notes, Shane.
It's not on my
notes.
Look
it up on Wikipedia.
Well, I'm going to continue in the realm of edgy movies with the 1992 movie Wayne's World.
What? Is this another Miramax picture?
It's another Miramax picture. So here's a little background. It starred SNL's Mike Myers and Dana Carvey as Wayne Campbell and Garth Alger. They hosted a cable access television show called Wayne's World in Aurora, Illinois. It was adapted from a popular sketch on NBC Saturday Night Live. The film grossed about $120 million in its theatrical run, placing it as 8th highest grossing film of 1992. And easily the highest grossing movie ever based on an SNL skit.
Where was Shakes the Clown on that list?
Probably 426. It was directed by Penelope Spheeris. So if that means anything to you, great. If it doesn't, so
who's that?
Family friend.
The movie received mostly positive reviews upon release and was commercially successful, unlike many SNL-based movies. It was followed by Wayne's World 2 in 2000. In 2000, readers of Total Film magazine voted Wayne's World the 41st greatest comedy film of all time. I like to do that.
When is Bronx Beat the movie coming out?
I hope never. The plot involves a scheming businessman named Benjamin, played by Rob Lowe. I don't know if this was pre or post his sex scandal.
Oh, way
conflict.
Post. That was like late 80s.
So they gave him a pass on that one. And his attempt to buy out the cable access program called Wayne's World. When the show is bought out, it is quickly reinvented, and the changes to the show, as well as Wayne's blossoming relationship with vocalist Cassandra, whose career Benjamin has also taken interest in, leads to a rift forming between Wayne and Garth. Here's a clip from the movie, which features some classic Wayne's World moments.
Okay, we're just about out of time, right? But before we go, we'd like to take a moment here for a Wayne's World salute to the guest jeans girl, Claudia Schiffer.
Swing!
Swing!
Tentpole! Wow. She's a babe.
She's magically babelicious.
She tested very high on the strokeability scale. Okay.
Hey, are you through yet? Because I'm getting tired of holding this.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Steve Carroll didn't invent that one.
Okay, so Claudia Schiffer, we salute you.
Sha-wing.
Okay, that's all the time we have for this week. Until then, good night.
Party on, Wayne.
Party on, Garth.
Wayne's World! Wayne's World! Party time! Excellent!
God, you listen to that, and you just remember how many of those phrases made it into the popular vernacular.
I don't know if that movie actually holds up over time. I do know that the actual Wayne's World TV show segments are probably the weakest part of the movie. I mean, I think it kind of the craziness that goes on beyond the cameras made it more interesting. But here's a couple more notes on why this movie I think is important. I don't think it's the greatest movie in the world, but it's the only Saturday Night Live spinoff movie to gross over $100 million.
It's Pat didn't?
It did not. because of the glut of... Actually, it began the glut of Saturday Night Live character movies, most of which are not funny and unsuccessful financially, including Stuart Smalley, Night at the Roxbury, It's Pat, Ladies' Man.
That's because the copy guy did not get greenlit.
Yeah, exactly.
Although the Stuart Smalley movie was interesting. And finally, this was pretty much the beginning of Mike Myers' movie career as a success, and pretty much the end of Dana Carvey's success,
Did
would say.
So I Married an Ex-Murderer come out before or after this? Do you remember? Because I cannot.
Before, I think.
I think it was before. Okay. Or it might have been right after.
I never liked that one, by the way.
Yeah, big fan. My wife is a big fan of that.
She likes Overboard, too.
Does like Overboard. And obviously...
Just giving you a little comedy barometer, folks.
Obviously pre...
it's a joke.
Oh, we all get along.
It's kind of surprising how good he is at getting... I'm sure he has writing credits on both of them, right?
Yeah.
So how good he is at getting, like, incredibly, incessantly annoying catchphrases into movies mm-hmm. that he knows will become popular.
It's, yeah. it's very crazy. And you know what? I think that that movie...
Look at Austin Powers. The head was full of them.
Yes. that movie began the rift between Dana Carvey and Mike Myers. I don't really think they like each other, and I don't really think they liked working with each other. From what I understand, Mike Myers had a little bit of a big head and didn't really think
Still
that
does,
Garth
I think.
Was that. Yeah, I've heard some pretty crazy things about the guy. So, any comments on Wayne's World,
guys? I
have
a ton, actually.
Okay,
he's been making notes.
This is actually the movie I've probably seen the most times in
really?
The history of the world. In the summer of 93, my friend Jeff, I was off for the summer, obviously,
yeah.
school. My friend Jeff and I, he lived like a couple blocks away. Watched it was on HBO at the time, like, and this was when HBO would show their new movies
yes.
like three times a day. We probably watched it, I'm estimating, 3 dozen times over the 2.5 month summer break. It was probably more than that, though.
Wow.
That's like a low estimate.
So you know this movie?
Yeah, we had it memorized.
Did you have a thing for Tia Carrere
for a long time? You know what? I did actually have a thing for Tia Carrere.
It's pretty sad,
along with the rest of the country.
Adam's childhood movie is Wayne's World, and my childhood movies were Weird Science and Police Academy 2. So
I guess you're better than me.
So I'm just way older than you. That's
I remember when I watched it in the movie theater. Feeling like the commercials had ruined almost every funny bit
yeah.
in the movie, except for the part where they're doing the commercials. Like they're just doing like, they're like, we're not going to sell out, blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
like, and that's all they're doing for like 5 minutes. And then the funniest part, and I still remember it, is when Garth's like, oh, I have a headache. And Wayne says, take two of these. Nuprin. And like,
they do
a Nuprin commercial where it goes black and white, except for the pill, which is yellow. And
right.
then a little yellow different.
They had like a whole Doritos thing too, didn't they?
Yes.
Like a Domino's pizza or something.
Right, they're like in like a NASCAR kind of suit with like all Domino's.
So. I hope I don't ruin some of your commentary, but they also featured the Scooby-Doo ending where they which was pretty unique at the time, and I think they were one of the first people to kind of bring out the
clue.
What's that? Well, no, I mean where they actually do Scooby-Doo, and they say they pull off the mask and sort of brought it into the forefront of pop culture vernacular. So
right.
So there we go. Anything else to say, Adam?
That for years I've still used Zhang as a positive expression because that means excellent in Cantonese.
Like, now you make me want to watch the movie.
Because like,
I know, so do I.
At one point, Wayne...
I want to watch it through child's eyes.
He's learning Cantonese to impress Tia Carrere's character, and he learns
Zhang.
And I don't know. I had other things too, but yeah.
That's all right. Well, everybody, that was the year.
Didn't he have like a big battle with her father or something, or was that part two?
I thought that was part two.
It was near the beginning of part two.
They have a big
when he discovers that the Cantonese or Chinese laundry secret is really just what's that detergent?
Calgon.
Calgon. Ancient Cantonese secret, my ass.
So that was the year 1992 via 2007. Guys, good job on that. I think it was a very successful random year in review. I look forward
Absolutely.
To doing it again as we...
I can't wait to make the robot speak another year.
Yeah, it'll be very good. And we'll do future years in future shows. So, everybody, thanks for listening. We'll take a break. We'll be back right after this.
This is the Oprah Winfrey Celebrity Shoutout of the Day.
The Academy Award winner for Best Actor, please welcome Forrest Whitaker!
That was the Oprah Winfrey Celebrity Shoutout of the Day. You go, girl! It's time to bust a move with Scope Sounds, the Scope Song of the Week. Drop that beat, homie.
Hit it!
It's wall-to-wall Transformers coverage right here at WSVP. Up next, we have Black Lab with their take on the classic Transformers movie theme. So crank it up and keep it on the scope.
Transformers! Prepare to strike, there'll be no place to run.
again. We're casting worlds apart. Stand divided, we will surely fall. Until our darkest hour.
Turn to the scope, just for the hell of it.
Under the scope. We are back from Scope Sounds with Under the Scope. It's our bi-weekly look at all of the news, reviews, and coming soon, all the stuff that's important to us here at the Scope. Let's kick this off, completely unexpected, with the news.
I like how you switched it up.
I know. Direct from the Scope News Center, it's Adam.
Hey.
Hit it.
Don't we get a chopper sound?
We want a chopper sound, right. Jared.
Fine, we'll get a chopper sound.
Adam's on it. We want him to do this from 10,000 feet in the air.
Good grief. I guess most people probably know this. Mr. Wizard passed away earlier this week. Mm-hmm. Not his actual name. His actual name was Don Herbert. Don Herbert, 89, who was television's Mr. Wizard, was for many years one of the nation's foremost popularizers of science, particularly noted for his ability to attract, inspire, and hold the attention of children. He died June 11th at his home in L.A.
Now, there's a joke there, like, and for his last wishes, he wanted his remains to be sucked into a pop bottle using a balloon and a match that would just literally pull the balloon right in. Thank you.
He died of cancer.
Wow.
Did you guys watch the show?
Kill me. No. I watched it religiously.
Okay.
I never did.
Nickelodeon.
Okay.
Nickelodeon had the best lineup.
Scope Chopper 7.
Had the best lineup in the morning. Okay, so I had a really weird
morning.
Sorry,
it took me so long.
Can we get a traffic report, Adam? There's a nerd pileup on Turnpike 93.
94 East is closed today. That's by me.
How's the traffic being rerouted?
I don't know. I didn't take
What's the delay? Will it be 20?
So Nickelodeon had a really good lineup in the morning. I had to wake up at 6 because my mom was a teacher, so she had to like leave at 7, so she had to make sure I was up and ready, because then I had to leave at like 8 or something. So I was like a latchkey kid from like second grade on or something.
Mm-hmm. Still a latchkey kid.
Yep. And I think I might be flipping them, but 6 o'clock Mr. Wizard, 6:30 Danger Mouse. And it might be 6 o'clock Danger Mouse, 6:30 Mr. Wizard. But whatever it was perfect.
I hated a Danger Mouse.
I
thought Danger Mouse was cool when I saw it. I
didn't like those British cartoons, but. I believe Mr. Wizard's World was the Nickelodeon was a Canadian show, as were probably, most shows in the day on Nickelodeon.
And then Inspector Gadget, I think, was on after that. But I usually switched over to ESPN to watch SportsCenter.
Wow.
The 30-minute repeating SportsCenter instead of today's 60 and 90-minute
nice
repeating SportsCenter.
With updates 28 and 58 on the hour.
Yes.
Classy.
Once an aspiring actor, Mr. Herbert used his gifts of showmanship, imagination, and manual dexterity to create demonstrations that satisfied the senses.
Wow.
Wow, who's this written by? Washington Post.
Sounds like many of the skills of strippers we know.
Yeah, actually, it reminds me a lot of Alton Brown's the way his career has worked, because he wanted to do, production and directing.
Alton Brown of the Food Network.
Right. Of TV shows, mm-hmm. and then realized that I guess food was also a passion of his, so he used what he knew to step in front of the camera.
Yep. Do all that make stuff. An interesting program.
Found out he couldn't produce a show from the craft service table.
Mm-hmm.
Never. We're all friends. It's a joke.
With almost 550 live broadcasts, the show ran through 1965, winning praise from scientific organizations and earning Mr. Wizard the image of permanent ambassador from the world of science.
Interesting.
After being revived on NBC, the show came to life again on Nickelodeon's cable channel from 83 to 1990. He was born in what state?
Minnesota. He's one of us.
Yes.
So he's that much more awesomer.
All right.
Sorry. I didn't watch him. I didn't have cable. I
should have talked to your mom about that when she was in. Letting you down so much. What else we got, Adam? Is there any other news?
Jack Thompson is calling Manhunt 2 for the Wii a murder training device.
What? murder training device, yes. Huh? Okay.
Breaking news, Adam.
Huh.
Jared saw Nintendo Wii's in the store this week.
Ooh, I did.
In the wild.
Like Monday.
It's very exciting.
It's very exciting.
More than one.
He fights for the kids. Image 1M rated games coming to the Wii are expected to be criticized and contested. Manhunt 2, in particular, is receiving much word from the anti-game lawyers. In an interview by Fox News, Florida Attorney General Bill McCollum, who's an AG that's agreeing with him, mm-hmm. Talked about the game's Wii version requiring players to slash and stab using the Wiimote.
Is that too much? I mean, too much? Adam says no way.
No. I don't really? Okay. How is this? And I guess I get it. Oh, yes. Perfect.
Wow, Jared, you are fast today.
How is this? And I get no one listening can, but who's slashing motion?
Are you masturbating? What is that?
Slash masturbating. Well, why don't they call it a masturbating training device?
Yeah.
It's also a culinary training. It teaches you how to chop vegetables. I mean, for crying out loud.
Jared have one of those games, Cooking Mama.
So what's the difference? I mean, you're just doing this,
yeah.
Or if you're holding the controller and you're pressing a button, that's still doing. I mean, there's no difference, and it doesn't matter. No one's killing people because of this. I'm really tired of him. Thank you. These are all perfect.
Jared gets the gold star of the show, by
the way. He did with Bully, Thompson is already suggesting beforehand that the game be considered,
what are we, swashbuckling?
Be considered a public nuisance. How he contests a game he probably knows nothing about, aside from a few screenshots and videos we may never know. Heck, it's not even out yet. Same reason why his attempts against Bully failed. Who knows if a harmless game like Trauma Center would have doctors poking each other's eyes out if nobody played it yet.
Crap, I need to find a surgery scene.
Bone sawing, quick.
I don't think I have anything.
Just so you guys are aware, it looks like Super Smash Bros. Brawl will take some heat too, since it encourages kids to beat the crap out of friends and throw them out the stage.
Yeah, and off cliffs with giant hammers.
Yeah.
A little bit of cynicism.
Don't worry,
story.
Nintendo's not fazed, stating that the games simply have different audiences, just like movies, television shows, and books. Don't let the kids touch Manhunt 2 and your problem is solved.
I, for one, will be buying that for my daughter. Wow.
next up, Jessica Alba wants no string sex.
What?
I wanted to point out, I don't know the difference between
Jessica Biel phone number?
And Jessica Alba. I don't know. Jessica Biel and Jessica Alba.
Oh,
I know they look nothing
difference.
Alike.
Yeah.
I understand that. But when I see one, I don't know which one it is.
Jared, control yourself.
The curvy 23-year-old, this is by The Sun, by the way, so okay. It's tabloidy, who was recently romantically linked to Hollywood hunk Mark Wahlberg. I read it as Hollywood Hogan at first, so that was kind of funny.
Oh, yeah, Jessica.
likes the idea of getting intimate with lots of different people because she loves experimenting.
Turn that off.
She told Cosmo magazine, "I just wanted to see what it was like to be with different people. I don't think a girl's a slut if she enjoys sex."
This is Jessica Alba?
Yes.
I think she's sexless.
Sexless?
I think she's sexy, but I just whenever I hear her talk, it's like she's like a robot.
I could have a one-night stand, and I'm the kind of girl who looks over in the morning and is like, "Do you really have to be here? I don't need to cuddle nice. And do stuff and do all that stuff because I know what it is and I don't try to make it more." I'm going to go on because this is hot. I feel like a lot of women try to make it into more so they don't feel so bad about just wanting to have sex. I don't really have a problem with wanting sex. Never have. I can't wait till this is played back as me saying it.
Cementing.
Even when I was a virgin and wanted to marry the first guy I slept with, I never really passed any judgments about that.
Okay,
but
you
now
need to,
I'm done dating around.
You need to isolate that sound bit because we're going to be using that against Adam.
Wow.
Lastly, a Star Wars story about the live action. This one's coming from TMZ, so okay. More tabloids. I don't really want to read it the way they have it written. Still a little upset over the Jar Jar Binks debacle?
Yeah,
sure
really?
Am.
Really? From 8 years ago? Mm-hmm. Get over it.
I never minded Jar Jar. I'm on record.
Think you know what happened between the time Anakin became Vader and Luke met Obi-Wan in the desert? If the idea is expanding that far away galaxy is a lifelong dream of yours, you are sad. You might want to grab your iBook. Oh, right. I always forgot that's... Is that still what it's called?
The MacBook.
MacBook, PowerBook?
Yeah. Yes.
And get your speeder bike and hurry down to Santa Monica. Anyway, TMZ spy informs us that Star Wars Camp in Santa Monica is interviewing writers for the upcoming live-action Star Wars TV show and have put people that are former or current writers of Lost and Heroes on the list.
That could be great.
Or there might be just, you know, nobody writers.
Exactly.
That's it.
That's it.
Some good stories there, Adam, and great sound effects from our good friend Jared. I like that one, too. So I think that wraps up the news. Let's move on to reviews. We've got one review this week. And before we get into that, let me inform all of you new listeners. Why are you pointing at me, Jared?
Because it's fun. I like to look down like I'm looking down the barrel of a gun. The Wii has trained me for murder, Shane.
Whenever you do that, I feel like I've screwed up. We've got a Scope scoring system, which is controversial.
Has it changed, or are we sticking to our guns?
It's really taken the world by storm, and you know, people are talking about it, but it stayed the same. It's a scale from 0 to 4 stars, 0 being terrible, and 4 being absolutely perfect. Will our review for In the Lot be perfect? I doubt it. But let's listen to Adam read the intro text, and hopefully I stepped on all his lines already, and it's going to be awkward and embarrassing.
I see that you have homage in here 6 times, and I don't appreciate that.
Did you really? Wow.
Shane, I don't know if I put it in
very
there.
Very tough. You put fromage in there, he's good to go, but homage, that's trouble.
You know the summer TV season is here.
What about decoupage? Can you handle that?
No. How about Adobe? Massage. I can't do that one either, because that one's not French. It's Spain.
Adobe?
It's Spanish. He said it.
Spanish.
Start reading, Adam. The clock is a ticking.
You know the summer TV season is here when the new reality shows start, coming out in full force. And this week we'll be reviewing one of the most hyped On the Lot.
It is.
Reality show guru Mark Burnett and Hollywood powerhouse Steven Spielberg have teamed up
to bring
the American public a show in which filmmakers compete in weekly elimination competitions with the ultimate prize of a $1 million development deal with DreamWorks.
Wow.
In Hollywood, it's what we call a groaner, which
a $1 million budget for a movie. So good luck with that. I'm pretty sure Project Greenlight even had a better thing than that. By the way,
they're just getting paid $1 million and they, you know.
On the Lot premiered May 22nd, 2007, and airs Tuesday nights each week. Oh, I guess we're done. Originally planned as a two-night-a-week show, dismal ratings pushed Fox to trim it down to a single evening. Soon it'll be a 15-minute.
A single taped evening, right, too.
Yeah. The show, hosted by entertainment reporter Adriana Costa, has a structure very similar to another Fox reality show, American Idol. Let's listen in as Adriana does her very best Ryan Seacrest impression imitation.
Now, we know what the judges think. What do the other 10 finalists think about tonight's movies? We pulled them literally 1 minute ago during the break, and here are the results. Hi, guys. All right, voted by the contestants, the majority said their favorite film tonight was Shalini's movie. Shalini, nice job. You guys, raise your hand if you voted for Shalini's movie. Look at them. They're all shy. All right. Now, the majority said your least favorite movie was
Shalini's movie.
Hillary's movie.
And they
okay,
still clap for their least favorite
your hand
movie.
If you chose that.
What a team.
Oh my gosh, Marty Martin. Okay, there you go. We have honest contestants. Thank you. You know what, guys? It doesn't much matter what the contestant thinks because
what are we going
really, America, it's you who has the ultimate say about who stays and who goes home next week.
Yeah, we wasted 15 minutes
of your
time. In
Hollywood, it's what we call a groaner.
To create drama yeah. You know, in the house.
What do you guys think? Oh, it doesn't matter what you think.
What is going to fill time?
Guys.
On the Lot also features three judges. Carrie Fisher, Gary Marshall, and one open chair that's filled by a new Hollywood director every week. Our second clip comes from the creator of Laverne and Shirley himself, Mr. Marshall. Pay close attention as Gary does his best and best. Sorry. Does Gary does his best not to be the heavy. ..
Worst Jew ever.
I gotta tell you, I understood the plot of your film much better than I did the three Mission Impossible films that I watched. But ring-a-ding-ding, you lost the bling, you had a fish, you had a dog, and I thought, you made a toilet a character, which I thought was a terrific thing.
That? You're
so,
adding that, right? Okay,
I think God. You once made one about flatulation, you made one about a toilet. I wish you'd make one which wouldn't make me want to go to the bathroom. But otherwise, excellent filmmaking.
All right, thank you. On the Lot can be seen...
It's in the notes. In the notes.
I'm reading.
It can be seen. You just got to find it. It's a treasure hunt presented by the Scope.
On the Lot can be seen, open parenthesis, for the time being on your local Fox station.
You like to rip out of parentheses, don't you?
He doesn't finish them ever.
Oh, Shane, you don't finish?
Every Tuesday night at 8, 7 Central.
Jared, what do you think of this show?
I was excited for the show when it was originally advertised and proposed.
As Project Greenlight?
As Project Greenlight.
It's different
sure.
than that, though.
And I thought, you know, the first episode or two where it was the preliminary stuff.
It was actually just the first episode only, and then they changed it immediately.
It was interesting, but there were so many people to try to keep track of. I'm like, wow, this is going to be hard. How are they going to cut it down? Well, they're going to cut it down pretty quickly, and then they're going to cut out six more and not even tell you about it, because it magically went from 24 to 18 in the space of about an episode. So, and then they kind of switched the formats. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but... then it switched to the American Idol type format, and this all happened in the space of like three episodes, and it completely threw me for a loop.
WTF?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, you sound
I'm not,
sickened by it.
I don't know. It's like it's an American Idol format, which is easy to understand, but I don't think it works for the kind of stuff they're doing.
No.
Not everyone does a film every week, and it's like most of the films I see are, I don't think they're very good.
Yeah, they're very
and the
mediocre.
Judges are right to rip into them. And I think part of my problem with the show is that they don't really get any real good criticism. You've got Carrie Fisher who fights not to say anything too negative.
Exactly.
You've got the guest judge who, if they like it, they like it. For the most part, they hate him, and they're not shy about saying that, as Michael Bay has
said
earlier.
It's not like these people are going to be directors ever, so it's not like they have to worry about, you know, offending.
Yeah.
The only things that I really like about the show is, number one, I like Gary Marshall, because Gary Marshall comes out and he's entertaining, he's energetic, and he... typically will give them some sort of constructive criticism, like, this didn't work, you should maybe work on this. But he almost always has something positive to say about it, too, which I think is nicer. It's great for them. You know, they're not going to completely destroy their ego because these big Hollywood people are saying their film sucks.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I like about the show is the host's low-cut tops.
Yeah.
But other than that,
she's... cementing our
women bashing.
Rights.
Come on, do you don't
that's
think that's
woman bashing? Geez. That's woman appreciating.
That's an that is a definitely an intentional thing. Her wardrobe and her look is part of trying
women,
to sell
she
the show.
Is a women knockout. Don't watch the show.
She's
it's a clearly
knockout.
She's attractive, but she's not a great orator.
No, I'm going to take over from here, Joe.
Very good.
The show would be canceled more than likely if Spielberg and Burnett were not attached to it. Let's be honest about
that.
Yeah,
and they say it's going to run through August. So
well, we'll see how that goes. And you know, I agree with almost everything that you've said. I really feel like the first episode was the best, and it was interesting, and it. You know, I was thinking, hey, this is going to be kind of a cool, classy sort of reality show. It's, you know, it might be more of the same, but at least it's going to be presented in a cool way.
Yeah, and it's
but then
filmmakers.
And then it just literally went in the toilet, and you know that reality shows aren't good when they're completely aping the American Idol style, and rarely can a show go and do that and be successful or be interesting to the viewer. And this is definitely an example of a show that cannot do that. I liked the judges. I like pretty much the judges across the board, but I wish that they would be truer to who they are. Like, you know, when you're talking about Carrie Fisher, here is a person who is, she's got a really cutting edge or cutting wit. She's very smart. She's very intelligent. She's been through everything in Hollywood, and you know that she can come across with some more interesting criticism and stuff that's going to be relevant to the show rather than, you know, you see her squirm in her chair when she's talking, like she doesn't really want to say what she's thinking.
Right.
And she
likes something, she'll come out
yes,
and say it. But
she can't hide her displeasure with what she's watching. And I think that that needs to stop. Gary Marshall sometimes comes across as the crazy old rambling Jew, but he is interesting.
He plays that part really well.
Yes, and he is interesting to listen to. And I think the guest judges overall do a pretty good job, actually. But
I mean, they're just so brutally honest. Yes. Sometimes it's tough.
Yep,
but it's tough to watch.
I think this is a show that had a great premise and a great concept, and you know, like Project Greenlight, there's a lot of good stuff in the pitch for the show, but the execution is terrible.
I would be better. I think the show would be better served if they showed a little more of the actual production part of it.
Yes, I agree.
You actually saw them. Maybe if they defined what sort of limitations they had. Because it just makes it sound like, oh, you got to make a film, do whatever you want.
Yeah, the show
here's a couple bucks, but if you need more, go out and beg and borrow from your friends and try to find actors at your film school or whatever. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any real strict limitations on what they can and can't do.
The show is about filmmaking, so you like to see the process of filmmaking
absolutely.
Rather than the final.
Because the personalities product. Themselves, they're not that interesting.
No. And most of those people aren't going to be American Idol types.
No,
I mean,
they're directors. They're not going to be in front of the camera.
Yeah. It's like having a podcasting reality show. Who's the best podcaster? Why would you want to see that?
Well, Adam Curry, but why would we do it?
Thank you. Adam,
yeah.
Wrap this up.
Okay, so I've watched 3 episodes in total now of the 5 that have been on. 4 or 5?
4 or 5. Doesn't matter.
Every one of the shorts, and they're shorts. I think that's a big problem with it, is that I think most directors don't want or know how to make a short, you know, from the get-go. They're all dumb, trite shit. They're all really bad.
Yeah.
And
stereotypical.
I don't know a better way for them. Like, I think the idea of the show is good too. I think that would get me in way more than an American Idol type show. You know, movie making. But I don't know how you do it.
But there's no movie making show, and it's all
right.
It's just the end result.
One thing I was thinking might make more sense is for them to have teams like Hell's Kitchen. And each team has to work together to make a movie. So they have 2 movies. And then whichever one wins, you know, that week.
Yeah.
Like, in each movie then could be 10 or 15 minutes long. It's still a short, but it's still a movie, kind
of.
Sure.
So, like, you'd pick a leader, like a lead director, and everybody else would follow as a bidding. Like
or
The Apprentice,
like,
or something
have,
like
they
that.
Have to
do it like,
Sopranos.
Sopranos, yes.
Do it like Survivor. Maybe you have 2 tribes, and, you know.
And then the losing
and you got to do these
things. Strand the directors on an island, and you give them 2 coconuts.
Something like that, like, because having 12 or 20 minute long shorts that are all awful makes no sense at all. I agree with the judge thing you guys said. One of the things that really annoyed me about Carrie Fisher is that in I think the 2nd or 3rd episode, they watch a movie short that wound up getting like the best audience, you know, like internet votes or whatever. And it was the one with the guy that was retarded.
Yeah.
And she hated it the first time.
Yeah.
Then they rewatched it because it won, you know, like, because people are idiots and they don't see that it clearly is making fun of a retarded guy.
I don't know if he intended to do that. I think it was
I don't think
actor.
He intended. I think he was. I think that he's kind of dumb.
I think it was funny.
When was this one on? Because I don't think I remember
that. That was the hillbilly guy's first movie.
I missed all the first movies because it was on Memorial Day and it didn't tape for some reason.
And anyway,
yeah, then the next episode they come back and they're reviewing it, and after it's won this award, whatever, yeah. You know, like he won
the
a
acclaim,
pass that week.
The acclaim.
She loves it now.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? So
yeah, they're
really
clearly
annoyed.
Being pushed around by the producers of the show.
Yeah.
And there's a guy on there from Minnesota who actually was a roommate of somebody I work with, and I get some of the inside scoop. And for some of his interview segments, they told him, okay, you need to be cocky and say, I think this is the best movie, best film that's out there, stuff like that. So it's once again one of those reality shows that maybe are manipulated a little too much by the people in charge because they're trying to find some sort of winning formula, and clearly it's not working. So.
If that's the case, if they're being manipulated that badly, then some of them are just – they're getting trashed because they have the pre-clip.
Yep.
Interview, and it's like, oh, this is the best film I've ever done, blah blah blah, and then they get to the movie and the judges just trash them, and they're like, you know, I don't think it's the best film you've done yet, you know, in this show even. It's like, wow, are they just setting them up to fail
probably
just for the sake of TV drama?
Of course they are.
Crappy.
Well, let's spin out a score on this thing and see what it gets.
The soap score is 1.25 star.
So I think it probably gets a better score than zero because of the concept of the show and the fact that the judges are likable and you know, decent folk that try.
And that it's not as bad as Girlfriends.
It's not as bad as Girlfriends. So there you go. You know,
that's the we judge everything against, right?
Absolutely. So, guys, you're wondering if we're going to be bringing back the random review, just the general normal segment that inspired our earlier random year interview. And the answer is no, because it is summertime and there's not a lot of stuff out there that we can easily put into the computer. But we are going to issue a challenge to our listeners. Yes, it's more interactivity, so it's crazy. You might not do it. But we want you to send in a show that you would love for us to review this summer. So send them in, and we will check out what you want us to watch, and maybe we'll do a review for it. You can send all of your show picks to comments@thescopeshow.com, or you can call us on our voicemail at what number, Jared?
206-350-7056.
And maybe we'll post something on the website as well to remind you of our request for shows to review. So that wraps up the reviews. We've got one more segment under the scope. That would be coming soon. Knock it out of the park, Adam.
All right. This coming Tuesday, June 19th, Bon Jovi's new album, Lost Highway, comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Don't confuse that with the soundtrack to the movie Lost Highway.
Yep. Years delayed, finally yes. Hitting.
The Polyphonic Spree have a new album. I guess you put that on here because you're a big fan.
I'm not a big fan, but I recognize kidding. The name.
I don't.
And the White Stripes album comes out.
What's the name of that?
Icky Thump.
Icky Thump.
I've heard a couple of tracks, and I like it so far. Apparently, the album was played in its entirety on some Detroit rock station, and then Jack White was angry. Like, it was not, I don't know if it's illegal, but it was not, permission was not given.
Gotcha.
The following Tuesday, June 26th, Ryan Adams, not Brian Adams, has a new album.
Damn.
The Beastie Boys has their new album coming out. And Jared, by the way, I hear that there is a good amount of instrumental tracks.
I believe
on
it's all
it's
instrumental.
All instrumental. Okay. Yeah, it's all, you can do whatever you want with it.
There you go. And the recently tour canceled Kelly Clarkson's new album comes out.
Yeah, talk about
re-evaluating.
A meltdown. Meltdown.
Poor Kelly Clarkson. I kind of like her.
Maybe she should do a smaller club tour or something. What's she doing, like arenas and junk?
Yeah, big arenas, not selling well. Maybe we could get her on the scoop.
Yeah, you can play the basement chain.
Nice.
Movies. June 22nd, Evan Almighty comes out, the $250 million sequel to Bruce Almighty.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's what they spent on it?
Rumored budget, yeah.
All real animals, mostly, yeah.
How do they think that's going to make its money back?
Well, they can't just shelve it after it hits a certain point. Yep. But that's like three times over budget. They didn't mean to do that. I think it was reshot. And then,
if we were doing a video cast, people would see my face of stunned disbelief. Yeah. I can't believe. Holy.
And it's sexy and hot, that face.
It's a joke.
We're friends. I don't really find him sexually attractive.
All right. Steve Carell, Lauren Graham, and John Goodman star. Do you guys think it will make $250 million US?
No way.
Who did you say? John Goodman?
That's what it says here. John Goodman.
Wait. Lauren Graham's in it?
Lauren Graham's in it.
Maybe I will see it.
Did you guys know that... Okay, so have you seen Knocked Up?
No.
Not yet.
I think we're going to see it this week.
I want to.
Okay, so, I mean, the basic story, you're like, that's not believable that Seth Rogen would get with... Katherine Heigl.
Yeah.
Do you know that Judd Apatow's wife is...
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
She is a... What is she? She was in...
she's in this.
Big
she's,
Daddy.
She's in Big Daddy.
She was Adam Sandler's
40-year-old virgin. She's in all those.
She's smoking hot.
Yeah.
But we love women.
Also,
what else?
Next Friday, 1408, the Sam Jackson, John Cusack movie that reminds you a lot of Identity. Just from the trailers, I don't know anything similar, but the one of the more recent John Cusack movies.
It's a horror movie.
Adaptation of, yeah, Stephen King.
Sorry, I got short Spielberg on the brain.
About a horror novelist forced to deal with some real life frights. And A Mighty Heart. Angelina Jolie stars as the widow of Daniel Pearl as he gets decapitated. So that'll be an uplifting movie.
She was just on The Daily Show, and I have to say, she's never looked better. No. Holy cow.
She's real skinny. And you know, I did hear that
I just want to preface that.
Big tits and skinny.
I just think she was just stunning looking.
To make it more family friendly, animated penguins in that movie.
Excellent. That it'll make a lot of money then.
Yeah, happy penguins.
And our first Wednesday release of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Live Free or Die Hard. John McClane returns, or Bruce Willis returns as John McClane. And blah blah blah.
All in Hollywood, it's what we call a groaner.
He blows up a helicopter with a car. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that one.
Oh, I am so excited about that. Wow. That trailer even got Mandy, who could care less about action movies.
Is it possible you might review that for the Scope website, or are you just going to talk about it now?
I'll just
never
talk
do
about
it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Put that in your column.
June 29th, Ratatouille comes out. You can watch 9 minutes of it on TiVo right now.
Getting great buzz right now.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Really?
I hope so.
On that one.
I want to see it.
For Patton. I hope it does well. And Brad, Iron Giant is one of my favorite animated movies of all time.
I would agree.
So I really hope that that... he did the Incredibles.
Right? I agree. It is one of your favorites.
Nice.
Also, going up against that is Sicko, Michael Moore's expose about the inadequacies of American healthcare system, which apparently I'm sure it's just hype on his part, but he's now hiding the film, you know, the real print in Canada because he's worried that the U.S. government might try to get it from him because there's some legal issue with like him getting something on film without permission from someone. I forget. I was reading
good research.
Yesterday. Yeah, thanks.
Dick. Wow.
We're friends, Adam.
It's just a joke.
I know. I can't say dick. On DVD next week. By the way, I would like to just say that last week, what's it called? The Spy Movie came out on DVD. It's really good.
The Spy Movie one?
With...
The guy from American Beauty?
Yeah. What?
I like how you agree and then go, wait, what did I agree to?
Breach. Breach came
out. Yeah, he was the guy from American Beauty that won an Oscar for it, was in that.
No, he's not.
Sure, wasn't he? The lead guy?
No.
Not Kevin Spacey, the other guy.
Yeah.
The dad.
The dad who had the idea.
Anyway, I wanted to recommend that.
American Pie or American Beauty?
I said American Beauty.
I know.
Picket Fences Season 1, Reno 91, Miami, which is great.
Holy cow, he's at warp speed.
Another, there's a really good Patton, Roswell bit there. Silver Spoon Season 1, Secret of Nim, the 2-disc set. Not Secret of Nim 2.
No.
1-disc set. It's Secret of Nim, 2-disc set.
You came in under the gun. Very impressive.
Thank you. Oh, we still have a whole other day to talk about. and June 26th, Black Snake Moan, The New Adventures of Superman. What's that?
It's an animated...
The New Adventures of Batman.
Animated.
Shooter. Miami Vice Season 5. And The Adventures of Super Mario Brothers. Is that the one with the live-action Captain Lou Albano?
I don't think it is. Okay. I think this is the sequel to that was mostly cartoon. So
lame.
Very lame.
A lot of animated stuff.
A lot of animated. Not, you know, kind
for
of
the kids over the summer.
It's a quiet DVD time period right now. So, you know, we take what we can get.
Absolutely.
So I think that wraps up under the scope, Jared.
With a big old bow.
Do it.
Under the scope.
I'm smelling controversy.
That's just me. I haven't showered.
Nice.
Gotta get my notes together. So we got some comments this time. Episode 30, got some comments.
Yes.
We're going to start out with something nice and pleasant. Nikki writes and says, fun show and informative about the past TV season. For someone like me who doesn't want... Doesn't...
What?
Doesn't... Who
is,
doesn't what?
Is Adam reading this?
There's a page... Sorry, there's a page break and a grammar issue. Who doesn't know what... It's nice to get the rundown of...
You hear that? Women don't
good.
Know how to grammarize
otherwise,
correctly.
Then it... she says, basically, we helped her find good shows to watch in reruns.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's what we're here for.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Nikki.
Carrie writes in and says...
Uh-oh.
Women in Minnesota are not as put together as those on the East Coast. Women can act, but can't sing. they're terrible and shouldn't be allowed to? I don't recall seeing women bashing on the scope description. Well, you didn't, because nobody would listen if we did.
Yeah. That's so, a subtext.
The no, I'd say the misogynistic club would.
Maybe they would. You're right. Do they have a bigger audience? Maybe we should
than us,
target
probably.
That. Anyway, here's a clip from the last show regarding women in Minnesota and the whole put-togetherness, and this is what she's commenting on.
Hotter women, Minnesota, or Baltimore?
Well, if we're gonna say like D.C., Baltimore area, I would definitely say out there than here.
See, wow. It's an East Coast thing. They just know how to put themselves together a little better. So we're making a generalization and not trying to like pick on any particular people, but I still stand by that statement. Adam?
Yes.
I don't think it's women bashing. I'm just saying, in general,
I say
women on the East Coast.
I say women out there are hot. Women here are ugly.
They're closer to... Wow.
Carrie, please keep listening to our show.
It's a joke.
I mean, honestly, none
I like him searching for it. Hold on. I can find the key.
None of us are lookers.
It's because they're closer to the fashion capitals of Paris and Milan. That's
right.
Why.
That's all.
That's it.
Anyway,
and all that we're close to is the butter capital of Winona, Minnesota. So
yeah, and Hormel.
And Hormel.
The spam.
What does that say? It says we're digging a bigger hole.
And
I
the
think.
Sugar beet capital of Fargo, North Dakota.
I like how Shane's reading Entertainment Weekly isn't paying attention.
Icky
at all.
Thump gets an A from Entertainment Weekly. Newsflash.
Here's the other thing is and this is just an honest request. I don't know when we talked about women not being able to act and not singing or whatever like that, or can act and can't sing. So if anyone out there can point out
because
what show
you guys said,
and maybe give us a time index and when that happened, that'd be great.
You guys listed what's her name as the best actress. So I don't
absolutely
understand. Maybe I said something.
I don't think it wasn't last show. I think it was a different show. That's what I'm confused about.
Well, I appreciate Carrie's ability to recall previous shows because I can't even do
certainly
that.
Certainly not.
I love it.
And I have them all in the
keep
archives.
Listening, Carrie, and either send happy or sad or angry emails.
Or just write
we love it.
Negative comments on my Facebook. Wingard.
Wingard.
Writes in and says he must have listened to his show finally, in at least the first 10 minutes. He says, ouch, brutal. I thought I felt knives in my back. Man, not in studio easy target. Oh, man, not in studio easy target. He's talking like movie engine or something. The old saying goes, as usual, the Scope Show twists my words like a braided Twizzler. Shane, I thought you knew
what?
Me.
What?
Shane? He's addressing you, Shane.
Oh.
I thought you knew me. One day, Bay will direct and reimagine a Robotech movie, and you can be excited for it.
Wow. What do you have to say about that, Jared?
It was directed to you.
Yeah, it was you, Shane.
I don't know what to say about it. Oh, I say, screw you,
would you
Wingard.
Like a Michael Bay Robotech film?
You would, actually, because there's not going to be a normal Robotech
it would
film.
It would never happen, and you know what? It wouldn't change what happened before, so I can deal with it. And there you go. There I think go. That's all that needs to be said.
He's got words for you, Adam. Adam, you hate me no matter what for no reason at all.
I don't know which
and don't give me a chance.
Here.
So I'll give you up. I'll give up here. Hey, it's Adam's Transformer. Singular.
Is that?
That's addressed to you. I don't know what that means. And now he attacks me. Jared, how many movies have we watched together? Come on, bro.
Two.
I thought
oh,
you
bro.
My, I thought you my boy in the studio. And Wingard, also known as Earl, one half of Spiel Bay. I am your big supporter. I try not to rip you, but I still stand by my sentiment that when it comes to Transformers, it's gone so far in the negative direction that I don't know how you can possibly reset yourself to see this movie with a clear conscience and an open mind.
Jared, overall...
And I don't believe it.
Okay, fair enough. Jared, quick question for you.
Yes.
Put you on the spot. A Scope score for both episodes of Spiel Bay, what would you give it?
Both episodes?
Yeah,
I'd give them combined.
Combined.
I go 2.75 stars.
Wow.
So you're saying each one is just under 1.5 stars because you combine them.
Oh, I thought it was averaging. I was looking for a mean score.
That is a mean score.
We're friends.
We're buddies.
And finally, we'll close it out with something maybe controversial. I don't know. Gary writes and says, I'm not commenting anymore. Except that he did just comment by not commenting. You guys never read my arguments on air, and then all you do is tell your listeners is that you won.
It's our podcast. What else are we going to do?
Well, I think that segues into a real fascinating thing that's coming up. Next show, we're doing the Nerd Roundtable Part 2, and hopefully Earl and Gary will be back in studio to debate these and other great topics. So
I'll make sure Gary's muted.
Okay, yeah. So, Jared, how do people get in contact with us?
Well, we've talked about it all show long, but I'll say one more time. You can email us at comments@thescopeshow.com, or you can call us at 206-350-7056. Or, if you're a friend of Adam, just hang out with him, and then when he goes to do a show, just come on over with him and talk all you want. Back to you.
Did we get a voicemail this week, or was that... I forget.
We got one, but...
Let's not play that.
Okay, I'm not sure. We like it. Keep sending voicemails. Just don't scare us with them. That's all we ask. We think they're great. So
we want real comments. That's what we want.
I think this is a great show, everybody. High energy, and I think we're going to be pushing that greatness into episode 32.
32?
32. That will be coming next time.
Absolutely.
So for all of us here, I'm talking about Adam.
I'm going to plug something. I don't care about you.
Oh, we got plugs?
I have my plug that I'm going to... I have a show, and I have a forum, and I'm going to speak.
Okay, do it.
I'm just going to mention that...
And then I'll close us out.
Possible Oscar, my band, will be at Convergence. And I believe the showtime will be July 7th at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon in the Harmonic Convergence Room, which is down on the ground floor. So come on by and check out our rockin' set if you're there.
What are the odds of hearing Dare to be Stupid?
Very, very poor.
Well, that's a bummer. Then I guess I won't be showing up.
But it's still possible.
Yeah, he didn't say it was out of the question. Just
that's
unlikely.
True. Very true.
I'm excited about it.
Okay.
So there you go. Convergence is coming up in just a few weeks. I don't think we'll have a scope presence too much there, but if you see us... stop by and say hi.
There you go.
Anyway, I think that wraps it up. Jared, Adam, myself, we love you. Thanks for listening to The Scope. We'll see you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves once again at the end. I hope you've enjoyed our time together. I know I have. Fear not, Scope faithful. Days shall pass as if they were but a moment. And Jared, Adam, and Shane will return with another thrilling episode. Until then, send your comments to comments@thescopeshow.com or leave a voicemail message by dialing 206-350-7056. Thanks for listening, faithful fans. This is Tony Partington saying, hey, though, tune in next time to another terrific edition of The Scope.